Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Men's Monday. Today's guest has endured an experience that, according to the National Institutes of Mental Health, is one of the most common mental health issues in the United States. What is that? It's major depression. But today's guest, Stacy Young, has not only been in that place, he almost took himself out of life and is here today to talk about his experiences. Stacy Young graduated from American University in Washington, D.C., and also from George Washington University in Washington, D.C. He spent a lot of time in school. Stacy Young, welcome to Mind Talk.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, Stacy, you've done a great deal in your life. You've had many work experiences. But one of the things that was so interesting to me, because I hear it a lot, and I know you do too, is one of the very earliest comments that you made in your book, Turning Darkness into Light, Inspiring Lessons After a Near Suicide. And you said, and I am quoting you, "Depression isn't something that I thought would happen to me." Talk about that.
Well, depression wasn't something that I even knew anything about. And I think that that's one of the biggest challenges in our society is we don't educate young people or older people as well about the dangers of mental health. And so when I was younger, when things were going on, the typical attitude was just get over it. And nobody ever said there might be a moment that might happen in your life where something really bad's going to happen, and it's going to make you feel not just bad, but really bad for a long period of time or really, really sad. And so we never had those type of conversations. So I never anticipated anything like that happening to me.
And, you know, the notion that one should, quote unquote, just get over it, I would think was exacerbated or enhanced by the fact that you are an African-American male. So really, this depression stuff, just not something that you wanted to deal with or that anyone gave you permission to even deal with.
Absolutely. And so there's a few things, that if you don't mind. So one is being a male. And being male and being a man and in this society, showing emotions isn't something that's celebrated. It's something that is stigmatized oftentimes. It's like, oh, you're being a punk or something worse. So that's issue number one. But the other thing is in my family, I saw other men who were very strong who did not display a lot of emotion. And when I had a moment where I had display emotion, which happened to be at my grandmother's funeral, it was the first time that I had ever lost anyone. And so it was a very emotional experience because I also lived with her for a period of time. And when I was at the funeral, I started to cry openly because I was devastated that she was gone. And the response from a male figure who I looked up to was, "You need to get yourself together and stop crying." And I said, "No, I'm not. This is my grandmother. I'm going to, you know, deal with these emotions the way that I want to."
Well, good for you. That took a lot of courage.
Well, I don't know if it took courage or I just knew it was coming out anyway, so I might as well have spoken up.
That sounds like courage to me. I mean, particularly when you're talking about responding to a male figure who you looked up to.
Absolutely, yes.
And you were saying, "Nope, not going to do it your way, going to do it my way."
Yes.
Which
agreed.
Really does speak to a measure of courage and really self-awareness also. The idea that men historically have been taught to, quote-unquote, suck it up, do you think that's changing at all?
I don't know if it's really changed all that much. I think it's starting to change because there's more awareness about a lot of things that were generally considered unacceptable. And so one of the things that I'm trying to do is to bring awareness to this because I've experienced a few times in my life where I have felt emotions, but I pulled them back because it was still that notion, even now with the things that I know, it's still that notion that someone's judging me. This doesn't come off as being manly. I'm not supposed to show emotion. And so that can happen on both sides, whether you're happy, because I've had events where I was really, really happy, where I was overwhelmed, and I pulled back those emotions. And when I did that, I didn't allow myself to fully deal with it, or I should say embrace the joy of the moment. And then when I was really sad, then at those times when I pulled back, it didn't allow me to fully let out the emotions that I needed to release from my system. So how I'm trying to educate folks is by telling my story openly and honestly about the things that I went through. But I also wrote a recent article that addresses this issue, and it's Why Shouldn't Men Cry? And so I'm trying to bring greater awareness to it in the work that I do.
That the recent article, how does one access that? Is it available online?
Yeah, it's available on my website. You can go to slyoungyoung.com/blog.html, and you can review all of my articles there. And if you look on the Life site, it's one of my recent articles. So I'd say it's probably right near the top.
Okay, terrific. We've been talking about depression as though everyone who's listening has the same definition of what depression is and what it looks like. So let's sort of pull back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you to describe for the listeners your sense, your awareness of what depression is and what it looks like behaviorally and what it feels like emotionally.
Well, I'll start by giving just a simple definition. And how I refer to depression, and this is just my definition, is when someone is feeling bad or sad or having a period where they're not doing the things that they were doing previously, they've withdrawn, and they just don't feel that energy or desire to move forward. So that's how I generally describe it. But I think we also need to get into the fact that there's really four types of depression, as I like to refer to it. There's the psychological impact, which is the irregular brain activity. Something's, you know, the thoughts might not be right for whatever reason. And then I think there's the psychological piece, which is more of a chemical imbalance. And sometimes we can get that treated with medicine or modifications in diet or just other things. And then the other two that folks, I don't know, always think about, and maybe they do. One is situational, which is tied to a specific event. It could be the death of a loved one on the anniversary of that. It could be something bad that happened at work. So that could be situational. And actually, I want to take back to what I just said about the death of a loved one, because that's more periodic. But situational could be the death of a loved one. You broke up, you had this long-term relationship, and it ended. And then the other one would be periodic, which is something that happens at certain periods of time, whether it's an anniversary of a divorce or a death or something else that was meaningful.
And so you're describing sort of different aspects of how depression can show up in one's life and in one's body. And it sounds like you're saying this is kind of a normal part of what human beings experience.
Absolutely. It is a normal part of life, and to say that someone doesn't experience this or can't experience this is denying a basic function of life, because we're never going to be in a state where we're always happy or we're always sad, but there can be extremes that keep us from being as productive as we can be or being as happy or prosperous as we could be.
And the reality is, if you do experience yourself as being quote-unquote always happy or always sad, then there's something going on that's not good for you, and you do need to seek out a professional evaluation. You also make the point that, as we've been talking about thus far, that depression is not something you should learn about later. It's something that you should know about sort of during the natural course, I guess, of learning or experiencing life.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I'm really starting to push for is to bring awareness to younger people at, you know, age-appropriate awareness. So maybe someone at 5 years old, they lost their goldfish or they lost a cat or a dog. They're going to go through a process of grieving, which may not normally be acknowledged or recognized, but you need to have a conversation that says, you know, I know you loved your fish, I know you loved your cat, I know you loved your dog, and I know they're no longer here anymore, but this is a part of life. But sometimes when these things happen, folks might feel really, really sad. So that might be an age-appropriate discussion for a kid that's 5, 6, or 7. And then as someone progresses in age, then you can have more thoughtful and more meaningful conversations about what does it mean to be depressed or what does it mean to be sad, not just sad for a moment, but a sadness that just won't go away. And I think if we start having those conversations, then folks, when they start feeling bad or feeling like they're unwanted or anything else, then they won't turn to drugs or alcohol, because that seems to be why we're starting to have an epidemic in this country and probably around the world as well, is because the knee-jerk reaction is, in order for me to feel better, I can just deal with the pain and everything that's going on by taking myself to another place by drinking or doing drugs, instead of saying, what is the source of these things and what can I do to make myself feel better by addressing the source of the issue and not trying to put a Band-Aid over it for the time being.
Well, there certainly is a lot of, I would say, motivation or applause, if you will, for going for the quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
A pill, a drink, or whatever it is. So you're absolutely right. And I think as we continue to live in a 24/7 world, it seems for many people to be even more important that they feel much better immediately. And again, as you said, that's just not going to work, because whatever it is you're trying to mask, You've got that issue plus whatever you're doing to try to mask it. So it gets to be tangled up.
Absolutely.
You talk about something that was going on in your life that left you feeling quite despondent, had you looking at your own values and just sort of looking at your own world. What was going on?
Well, for me, the reason that my depression started is because I work for several large corporations, and including a government organization as well. And in these organizations, people were doing things that were unethical or highly questionable at best. And so what I decided when I was confronted with these difficult challenges, because when you see things that are going on that are unethical, or if someone's asking you to do something, we always have a choice. And sometimes folks forget that we always have a choice. And I chose not to get involved or be a party to these things and try to deal with it the best I could while I was in the environment. But unfortunately, the individuals that I work with did not have the same moral or ethical beliefs that I did. And so when I could no longer do anything else at my level or working with those who were in power to do something to change it, I decided to remove myself from the situation. Now, what do you do when you work in multiple organizations, especially in some of the consulting roles that I was in, where folks are doing this all the time? Well, then you start to get depressed about what's going on and having to make these changes. And then when the opportunities don't start to happen for you, because then folks start saying, well, what's wrong with you? Then that leads to a period of, sadness and depression.
So this happened over a period of time that you found yourself in environments where you were really being asked to ignore your own moral code and do whatever your supervisors or directors wanted you to do.
Absolutely. And that could be from working in a government environment where I sat at my desk for 7.5 hours a day and didn't do any work. I consider that to be fraud and a waste of taxpayers' money. That could be one of the other things was being asked to falsify a government report, which I didn't want to do so that the person that I was working for could maintain that client. And the other issue that I faced a lot of times, especially being a consultant coming into organizations where I wasn't a direct employee, was incidents of workplace bullying. So that's another thing that I address extensively. I write extensively about depression and suicide prevention based on my own experiences, but also based on my own experiences about workplace bullying and ethics in the workplace. And both of those things can tie together closely. Well, actually, all three of them.
Absolutely. So you became almost a pariah, it sounds like. If you weren't going to toe the party line, they didn't want you there, and they were going to make your life miserable.
Well, it for me was when the decision was made to tell me to do something that I considered to be unethical, and I didn't have any other choice but to do it or to lose my employment or walk away. I wasn't going to wait to lose my employment. I made a decision to walk away because I always have a choice. And so when I look back now after everything that's happened, and when I talk to folks about my experiences, I said I will absolutely do the same things again, even though it led to such depression and a near suicide, I would absolutely 100% without reservation do the exact same things again today.
And you know what's interesting is that we live in a world where people define you by what you do for a living. Mm-hmm. By whether you have a job, is it the right job, is it the job that has status, do you make the money? So for you to make a choice to walk away from that situation, it makes sense that that would kind of send you into a tailspin.
Absolutely, because when we have those conflicts between what we believe and what's happening in the environment around us, when there's that conflict and you cannot resolve it, it leads to internal strife. And depending on how long those situations occur, it can cause you to go through short periods or long periods of depression. And the other thing that I want to mention real quick is, so a lot of times folks think that depression is you're at this extreme. And depression does not mean that you're at an extreme. Depression has a spectrum, just like anything else. So you can have a little bit of depression where you can be functioning. And then I think the higher that your depression impacts you, the more, or actually the less you're able to perform, and it impacts your functioning and your cognitive abilities and your desire just to do anything. So we have to understand that depression isn't just an extreme. There's an spectrum, and it does not impact everybody in the same way. So when folks are judging, well, you need to get thicker skin or you need to handle it this way, what works for one person does not work for someone else.
Absolutely. And you know, in fact, there is a kind of depression that many people live with for years. And they go to work, they go to school, they do whatever they do. But there's sort of an edge of joy that they don't seem to experience. And that's depression. But from the outside looking in, it may not look like anything even close to depression because they're going to work, they're going to school, they're kind of looking like people expect other people to look like. So it is absolutely on a spectrum. There are absolutely ebbs and flows. And there really is, as you say, there's a lot to learn about what depression is, how it affects one emotionally and physically, as well as behaviorally. Stacey, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'd like to pick up here and kind of talk to you about who you reached out to, if anyone, as you felt yourself becoming more and more depressed. Folks, this is Pamela Brew. I'm having a conversation with Stacey L. Young, who is the author of many books and many articles. But today we're focusing on turning darkness into light, inspiring lessons after a near suicide. We will be right back with Stacey Young. Going through these experiences at work, was there anyone at work that you felt that you could actually talk to about this? I can't imagine that you were the only one being asked to do things that didn't feel comfortable for you.
Well, in my particular case, because I was at a senior level, I was dealing with senior level executives, so I did have conversations with some of the leadership teams in the environments that I were in, but they were unwilling to do the right thing. And when they were not willing to do the right thing after multiple conversations and documentation on my behalf, then I felt I had no other choice but to do the right thing for me so that I could sleep at night. And that meant to walk away instead of doing something that was unethical for a paycheck.
And typically when organizations are bringing in consultants, those consultants are reasonably well paid.
Absolutely.
So you were walking away from certainly a reasonable income, and who knows what the ripple effect would be just throughout your industry. Certainly people talk. So you really risked a lot by making the decision to leave, but it sounds like you believe that you would risk more if you made the decision to stay.
Right, and that is part of the consideration. The first thing was, these were against, the things that I was being asked to do were against my ethics and morals, first and foremost and primary. The secondary effect is that if I decided to do something that were against what I believe, then that made me them, and I didn't want to become them. And the impact of that would be, I would now become somebody that I didn't want to be. And I would also encourage your audience to read one of my other articles, which is just simply called What If? And it actually addresses this particular point, because what if I had decided to do the things that they asked me to do that were against my ethics and my morals versus doing the things that I did? And anybody who reads my entire story, and I won't go into it now, will find that the impact of what I'm doing now, because I stood in my own convictions in terms of what I believed, have allowed me to help more people and have a much more value than I would have had in terms of the salary that I lost.
You know, you've been talking a lot about ethics and morals, and I'm not entirely clear that folks recognize, as much as one would hope, the critical value of being aware of what your moral compass looks like, being aware of what your personal ethics look like, and being aware of how much it costs you in all kinds of levels when you walk away from your personal ethics, your moral sense of being in the world.
And if we don't address those things when we're having that conflict, it's going to cause disruption. And so it might just be initially maybe just a little bit of loss of sleep, or maybe you skipped a meal. But over time, it does have a physiological effect on the body. And when we don't deal with things, and I think that this is the heart of a lot of depression, if it's not medical related, is that we refuse to deal with a particular situation, and we push it aside, and we push it aside, and we push it aside, and then one day, boom, everything explodes, and then that's the moment that we start to break down, or we look for that quick relief, and then we, as we were talking about earlier with alcohol or any types of substance, you go and you get that, and you're like, man, I was feeling bad that day, and now it made me feel better. And then when it happens again, you're like, oh, let me go do that, because that's going to make me feel better. And even though that you're masking it, it's making you feel better, and the more that you feel better, the more you're likely to go back and grab for whatever that substance is. And then when that stops, you know, when that starts not working as much, then you start to gravitate to things that are even stronger. And that's when you get into that dangerous spiral.
And those substances can be, it certainly can be liquid substances, but it can also certainly be pills and injections, but it can also be things like excessive exercising, excessive mm-hmm. sexual activity, excessive television watching. I mean, it can be any number of things that you use to cover up the feelings that are inside. And when you do that, as you well know, as you've experienced, all you're doing is you're giving it kind of time to grow. You're kind of like feeding the depression when you take the energy to try to cover it up and put it someplace else.
And that's unfortunately what a lot of folks are doing, because as a society, we don't always want to hear that somebody's having a bad day or something's going wrong. But I think the bigger issue is, and this is actually from personal experience, because a lot of folks said to me, oh my God, I didn't know anything was wrong. I knew you stopped doing this, or you weren't doing this as much, but nobody was comfortable enough to ask me a question, are you okay? And it doesn't have to be, oh, I see that you're acting differently now, and sort of directing a position at someone, but just simply stop and ask a question, are you okay?
and wait for the honest answer.
Exactly. And allow them to tell their story on their own terms. And they might not do it right at first, but it might be a series of conversations over time, but ask the question and listen.
Well, you know, another thing that is very true and very powerful, and again, it's not clear to me that enough people recognize the value of this, is having someone in your life who will listen to what you have to say. That can be such a powerful gift. Not even necessarily responding or trying to help you fix it, but just someone who will listen, care enough to listen to you and listen to your story. Very powerful.
It is very powerful. And one of the things that we were talking about earlier was about basically acting or giving off the appearance that everything is okay. And one of the articles that I wrote is called Functioning While Depressed. And one of the things that we we've touched on a lot of the things, the substance abuse, alcohol abuse, drugs, whatever, excessive activities, but also I briefly touched on this, but sleeping pattern changes when you just can't function, not getting enough of sleep because you're tossing and turning all the time. But that withdrawal, when someone starts to withdraw, they're not going out as much, they're not hanging out as much, they're not talking to you as much on the phone, look for those signs as well.
Because they absolutely mean something. Any change is worth paying attention to, because any change indicates that there's something going on that's different from what was going on before the change.
Absolutely.
You talk in your book about the impact of Robin Williams' death on you and Facebook, of all things. And Robin Williams, as we know, was an extraordinarily gifted, talented comedian who took his own life. How did Robin Williams become so powerful in your life?
Well, we have to go back a little bit before we go forward.
Okay.
So in March of 2014, that was the month that I almost took my life. I actually made my last planned phone call. And so fortunately, I had an intervention. We can talk about how that happened a little bit later. The following month, in April, I decided to write a book about my journey because I knew that there would be value in writing my story. And so I called my sister and I told her I was going to write this book in about a month. And she's like, how are you going to write a book in about a month? And then I said, you know what? I got to get this out. So I focused over a two-week period, and I got everything out of me. And it was a great opportunity to release all the things that I had gone through. So that was when I wrote my book, Choosing to Take a Stand, Changed Me, My Life, and My Destiny. So it ties in my depression with all the things that we talked about previously that led to my depression.
Okay.
And so I wrote this book, and one of my good friends read it, and she got back to me, and she said, don't ever release this book. She said, this is your private story. Don't ever release it. And so I was thinking, I was already on the fence whether I wanted to release it or not, and now this is someone that trusted me, that I trusted and was giving me their input. So I said, you know what? Maybe I should never release this book. But sometimes life, God, chance, whatever you want to call it, comes in. And shortly after she told me that, Robin Williams unfortunately took his life. And I was on Facebook, and I saw someone who was a friend of a friend wrote a message after his death and said, why would someone just throw away their life like that?
Mm.
And I read that, and I was like, are you kidding me? And then I said, do I want to get involved? And then I said, yes, because this is stupid. I know how I feel and how I've been impacted. So I wrote a note back to this person that I didn't know, and I said, sometimes folks are going through things that you just don't even know, and give off an appearance that everything is okay. And it's unfair for you to make these judgmental comments. And so I left it there that night. And then the next morning I woke up and I said, uh-uh. I said, this is my story too. This man just took his life. I'm going to go further. So then I went on Facebook, and then I released to all my family, friends, and others who are connected on Facebook with me, and wrote extensively about what I had been going through and that I had almost taken my life. And the responses from everybody was overwhelming, and some of my friends were like, well, why didn't we know this? I can't believe that this is you. And the thing that I never could have imagined was the day that I did that on Facebook, it was like ripping off a Band-Aid. And that secret that I had been carrying so long, which actually compounded my depression, was no longer an issue because I had told my story. And then just coincidentally, the next day or the day after, Maggie Linton from The Maggie Linton Show contacted me, and she said, "Hey, I've got an opening next week. Do you want to be on my show?" And I said, "Sure." I said, "You want to talk about something happy or something sad?" And she said, "Well, what do you have that's sad?" And I told her about my story, and I don't know what came over me. And at that point, I said, I'd agreed to go on a national show just a week after I had just disclosed to my family and friends to tell my story, because I knew the value and the power of that personal connection to my story.
And again, you know, a true moment of courage. It's interesting how when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, in fact, what we're doing is taking back our own power, and a lot of folks don't really see it in that light. Let's go to that day that you were going through, in your mind, your final routines as you planned your own exit from this world. What was that day like for you?
Well, first and foremost, I want folks to clearly understand that just because someone has a desire to take their life does not mean that they've planned it. Sometimes it just happens. And so with me, what happened was I woke up that morning. There was something different, and I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't focus. The room felt really, really heavy. And I had the TV on, but I just couldn't focus on the TV. And I just laid there in bed for a couple of hours, and then the feelings of darkness and heaviness and everything that I had been going through had finally caught up with me. And it was just overwhelming. And just in a matter of moments, it went from feeling really, really bad to I can no longer do this anymore. And so as I'm sitting there, I felt like there was a fog in the room. I wasn't able to concentrate. And then I made my planned last phone call to my brother. And I told him, you know, the only reason that I made this phone call is because I'm my mom's caregiver. And I said to him, if anything ever happens to me, I just want to know that you're going to take care of Mom. And I tried to keep my emotions in, and then I started to break down, and then my brother said, "What's going on, Stacy? What's going on?" And I said, "I'm not going to talk. I can't talk," and I hung up the phone. And then my brother called back for about a half hour, 45 minutes, frantically trying to get me. And then finally, with a lot of hesitation and reservation, I picked up the phone and I spoke to him, and he said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Look," he's like, "Stacy, this is just a moment. You got to get past this moment." And so that was powerful, but in my frame of mind, it wasn't powerful enough. But the thing that was sort of like riveting for me is when he said, "Why don't you use the advice in your own books to save your life?" And that comment, there was just something powerful about that, because I write this series, it's called It's a Crazy World, Learn From It. And they're inspirational quotes about dealing with life. And he's telling me, "You're writing this stuff, why don't you go follow your own advice?" And there was just something about that moment that started to bring me back to reality. But the one thing that I also wanted to point out, beyond me not planning to take my life that day, it just happened. It was there in the room with me. I also want to talk about, just really quickly, the psychosis that happened, because, and I write about this extensively, about this day and this experience, but what happened was, when I was at that final moment between deciding to live or to die, and it was just a momentary decision, and everything would have been done one way or the other, I heard in my voice what I believe was the devil's voice. I heard a rhythmical chant in my head that said, "Do it, do it, do it." And had I not reached out to my brother and made that call because I was concerned about my mother, I would certainly not be here today.
Your brother was incredibly powerful in your life.
Absolutely.
You know, I had asked you earlier, I'm wondering, you tried to talk to folks that you were working with, colleagues, and that didn't get you any place positive. Were there any family or friends who you felt you could confide in as you were experiencing your own growing sense of depression and despair, quite frankly, is what it sounds like?
Well, so when I was going through those things, I wasn't really depressed because I was confident in the decisions that I made. But over time, when the finances weren't there, they were being impacted, and I wasn't finding new opportunities, and I started questioning myself, then things started to change over time. So I never really had conversations with anybody about what was going on, and that was part of the problem because I thought it would eventually work itself out. And when it didn't, the stress of hiding of what was going on and worrying about the shame of my situation and worried about other people judging me, those were all powerful motivators for me to remain silent, because we have a society that is so judgmental that if you have fallen for a moment, then you must be less than or there's something wrong. And then when our ego gets in the way of us thinking logically, it leads us to doing things that we shouldn't do. Now, in hindsight, I know I should have reached out to folks and had conversations, and I know that I have a support system, but it should not wait till someone is about to take their life for them to figure out that other people love them. And so now I have this great support system, but what I make sure that folks that are around me know is that I love them today, and if they ever need me for anything, if they're having a moment similar to mine, I am always available without judging.
Without judgment. And that's perhaps one of the critical pieces of that, to be able to hear it, to be able to hold it, if you will, and not judge. Not tell the person they shouldn't feel that way or they should feel some way. That just does not help at all.
And I think that that's one of the challenges, is when someone is telling their story, someone who's depressed is telling their story, folks tend to project their feelings onto the other person, instead of trying to understand from their perspective what is it that they're going through. So if I could just walk through just a couple of things that I would recommend, or my suggestions for helping anyone who might be depressed.
Well, let me do this. Let me ask you to hold that thought. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll pick up right here.
Okay, great.
Stacey Young, author of Turning Darkness into Light, Inspiring Lessons After a Near Suicide. Stacey, what are the comments that you would like to share with the listeners? What would you like for them to know?
Well, if you are someone who could help somebody who's going through depression, there's a couple of things that I would recommend. First is, don't make assumptions. Don't come into the conversations with them about what's going on with assumptions about what you think is the issue. Let them tell you what it is from their perspective. Next, I would say, offer assistance. Tell them that you're there to support them with whatever they're going through, and that as long as it takes, you'll be there to support them through their journey, because the worst thing with dealing with depression is that feeling of being alone. Next thing I would say is, don't be judgmental. The one thing that someone who is already dealing with difficulties doesn't want to hear is that somebody is judging them and what they're going through. So don't be judgmental. The next thing is, allow for disclosures on their own time. And that means when you have that initial conversation, don't force them to tell you things at a pace that's comfortable or right for you. Let them tell their story as they are comfortable. So the first conversation just might be, I'm depressed, and that's all I want to say right now. And be okay with that, but let them know that you're available for follow-up conversations. And then check in again if you haven't heard anything else. And then when they start to let you know what's going on, let them tell their story. Let them tell their entire story, however much that they want to tell. Ask them questions about the story that they're telling, but don't try to force them to tell other parts of the story before they're ready. And then the last thing that I would say is to absolutely, 100%, give them nothing but unconditional support.
So what does unconditional support look like?
Well, unconditional support is not walking someone through their recovery in the way that you want it to be done. So if they're falling, you know, so if they want to do certain things, allow them to try it. And then if those things aren't working, work with it with them to figure out a solution to why they're falling short of the goal that they might have set, or that they're not progressing in terms of the recovery as much as possible. But while you're walking through it, you do some of the things that I said earlier. You offer assistance. You don't be judgmental. You help them to progress on their own time, because everybody recovers at different stages and paces. So just make sure that you're there to listen, to support, to understand, to not judge, but just be there. And sometimes being there just means sitting next to somebody on a couch.
So being there doesn't mean that you've got to rewrite their whole story, change their minds about how they feel, or come up with the world's best and greatest solution.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's just being there and being in an environment where that person is. And sometimes folks aren't ready to have a conversation, but they'd love to have the company, just sitting and watching TV, telling a little joke or something, just being supportive of what they're going through and allowing them to go through it at their pace.
It's actually what you describe as a very loving way and a very respectful way to be with that person who is dealing with their own life in the way that in that moment is the best they can do.
That's what we need to do. We have to be compassionate about what somebody else is going through, because one day it might be you.
Well, that's very true. You know, as you heard me say early on, major depression. And again, yes, there are different shades of depression, if you will, but major depression is one of the most common mental disorders in the United States. So when you say it might be you, you are absolutely right that it very well could be you. And the way to heal is what, in part, what you've done, which is to get your story out and to recognize that you're not alone in your story. Because, you know, one of the things that people will often say as an attempt to comfort is, I know exactly how you feel. And then they'll start going off into their story. That's not helpful.
No. Or the other one is, what somebody actually said to me is, yeah, I understand you're going through some things, but there's people in Africa that have it worse off than you do.
Right.
That doesn't help me. That's not my life. That's not my perspective.
Absolutely. And what it does is it kind of creates a blaming, shaming moment for you, as though you don't have a right to your own feelings, whatever they are. Even that then sounds like it's wrong. So the notion of sort of being there with that individual in the way that they need you to be there can be very, very powerful. You have devoted a chapter in your book. You've entitled it "Depression as a Mnemonic." Talk about that. What's that chapter about?
Well, that chapter is just taking the word depression and giving some logical steps and easy steps for folks to follow. And it's a reference for anyone that's affected by depression. So it's D, decide to seek treatment or to take action to become better. E is to educate yourself about depression or anything that needs to be done. And so a lot of times folks think medical treatment is the only option. Well, that's not the only option. Sometimes it's talking to a friend, talking to your pastor. And for me, for my journey for recovery, I've written extensively about my journey to recover because I know that it's helping me because it allows me to get these things out, but I know that it's helping other people as well. P, persistence. You've got to persevere and go through that process of recovery. It might not happen right away, so you have to be dedicated to going through the process however long it takes. R, reevaluate. Sometimes we take a particular treatment and we say, well, it isn't working. I don't want to try anything else, or it's not working fast enough. Well, we need to reevaluate our situation periodically to determine if there's other things that are working, aren't working, might be more effective. E, encouragement. Get people around you that love you, that will support you unconditionally, that who won't judge you. S, seek. Sometimes we just have to have moments to just relax, to decompress, and just get away from everything. And silence sometimes can be a valuable tool in recovering. S, support. We've got to become more comfortable with supporting others on their journey. Support doesn't mean you're supporting them just when they're high, but support means you support them when they're low and help them get back on their feet so that they can start working back towards that high position again. I, initiate. You've got to take steps, active steps every day to manage your stress or manage those things that aren't working in your life. Because one of the things that I think about all the time, and I talk to folks about now, because when I speak to large groups about overcoming challenges, is that if you are going to work and you hate it every day, you've got to make a change. Life is too short to go someplace that you hate every single day. If there's other things in your life that are affecting you that you're not happy about, you've got to make a change because that's what it's all about. Oh, openness. We've got to remove the stigmas related to talking about mental health challenges. Mental health challenges should be discussed just like anything else that happens in the body. When we have a cut on our arm or we have a broken hand or anything else on the outside, we're willing to tell people about it. We've got to stop judging what's going on the inside, because when we remove those judgments, then everybody's going to be better for it. And then N, never give up. No matter what's going on, never give up, because even when you're going through something or while you're doing it, going through that cycle, and it seems like it might be never ending, there's somebody else you can help. And so what's interesting about my story is the day that I almost took my life, 3 to 5 hours later, I got up, forced myself to go to an activity I was supposed to do. I was supposed to go to a jail to teach. I forced myself to go there. Unfortunately, I couldn't get in that day because it was locked down. But because I willed myself to move forward, even under the most difficult of circumstances, that was the moment that changed my life, and I know that it can help others as well.
Well, and the reality is that sometimes just changing the scenery, I mean the physical scenery that is around you, whether it's walking from one room to another or to the front door and back or to the corner and back, can have such a huge, almost clearing effect on how you're feeling. It's not certainly going to be a cure, but it can make an important difference.
And another thing that works well, I heard Nigel Lithgow say this from So You Think You Can Dance, because he talks about depression, because I've lost some folks that he knows, and he says, just dance. Just dance. And sometimes just that movement or hearing the music can change your mind and your attitude.
Well, it is indeed true that music is very powerful in folks' lives. Tell us about the days following that initial thought, that plan that you had, that momentary plan that you had to take your own life. What happened in the days immediately following?
Well, immediately following, the first thing that happened is I had some real heart-to-heart conversations with my siblings. So my brother, Johnny, I called him on that day, but I also called my sister, Joyce. And we had some conversations that we have never had. And I told them, after I made it past that moment, I said, I don't know how long I'm going to need it, but I'm going to need to lean on you for a while. And they, it just still gets me emotional now, because we had conversations that we should have had long ago, and we've become much more connected than we had been in a long time, because we were all living our own lives, and now we talk on a more regular basis, more frequent basis. And but also, my friends who now know what I've been through have become my biggest cheerleaders and fans, and have said, if you're ever at a moment that you're at that place again, you call me. It doesn't matter what time of day it is, you call me. So now I'm learning that I don't have to be a superhero. I don't have to do it all alone. I need to check my ego that was getting in the way of me getting help. It's okay for me to be vulnerable and say I'm struggling and that I've gone through some things, because other people out there might be able to help me. And it's okay if I'm falling down, but as long as I get up quickly.
As quickly as you absolutely can.
Right, whatever that means for you.
Exactly. And, you know, what the another piece of this whole experience of depression is that if depression runs in your family, you're not guaranteed to have the experience, but you are predisposed to having at least an episode of depression. And the other piece is that once you experience an episode of depression, you actually can experience it again. It's likely that you will have another experience. So if you have gone through a time and really been depressed, found yourself on the other side of it, and then X number of moments later, weeks, months, years, find yourself feeling sad and depressed again, it doesn't mean you failed. It doesn't mean your life is over. It means you're human. And just the way you were able to navigate it before, you can navigate it again. And you may need different kinds of support. But what you continue to remind us is that support is absolutely out there.
And, you know, the other thing that I want to pick up on what you were just talking about is I don't want anybody to think that I almost took my life and then everything was wonderful. It wasn't. It's been a long period of time. I almost took my life in March of 2014. It's been a long period of recovery and self-reflection and understanding. I understand myself more today than I ever have, but it's been a period of time. So one of the folks that contacted me online said to me, you know, what's wrong with me because I'm not recovering as quickly as you did? And there's nothing wrong with you. You just need to go through it at your own pace and figure it out. Figure out what works for you. So don't ever judge or don't ever consider or evaluate your progress relative to someone else.
And also, but recovery looks different for different people.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I want to make sure that we cover, because we've talked about all of this depression and suicide prevention and how do you help someone who's might be depressed, but also I want to leave folks with a little bit about how can you help yourself to move forward. So for me, I created a mnemonic that I use to keep myself focused. And so a lot of times when we're doing things, we're maybe not applying our energy in the right way. So what I tell myself now is that I'm going to make sure that I'm always ready to tee off. And that is, I'm going to use my time, energy, and effort on fulfilling fantasies. And another word for fantasies is dreams. And so what's helped me to continue to move forward over the last couple of years, and I've done things that I could never have imagined because I push myself to keep moving forward, because some days I have to say to myself, keep moving forward. And there's been moments where I have fallen down and I've been on the floor crying. I'm not ashamed to say it. But I call my sister or my brother or a friend and say, this is how I'm feeling today. And then they help me to get past that moment. But in order to move forward, I leave folks with like four things. You got to believe in yourself. No matter what you're going through right now, believe that it's going to get better and believe that you can make it through. Power of choice. We always have choice in the actions that we take. So we can choose to actively deal with what we're going through and address those issues that are causing it, or we can choose to not deal with it and mask it by doing drugs or alcohol. It's a choice. But we've also got to be resilient. We've got to say, I don't care how many times I stumble or I fall on my path to recovery, I'm going to keep moving forward. And then the fourth thing is be persistent, because being persistent is going to get you towards whatever goal you set. You've got to keep moving forward.
Stacy, I have to thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. And we're going to have you back because I know there are other things that you have written that I will be bringing you back to talk about. But for today, if you would give folks your web address again.
So my web address is slyoung.com. And from my website, there's a lot of articles, there's videos, and links to a lot of other things that I'm working on.
All right. Sounds great. slyoung.com. Stacy, you will be back with us, I know. But for now, thank you very much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I hope this discussion will help a lot of folks.
I suspect that it will indeed. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you may choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. You can listen to Mind Talk on demand by going to myndtalk.org. If you'd like to be in touch with me, you can just send me an email, Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. And again, that's myndtalk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable.